Chapter 9. Parkview Estate, Ikoyi, Lagos, Nigeria. November 20th, 2016. 10:28 p.m. The champagne-coloured ombre sequin dress clung tightly to Noma's body and glittered under the lights, lending an almost spectral quality to her figure. It had been only a few weeks since they had become partners, but thanks to a steady diet of spirits, she was almost back to her full strength, as she'd been when Shigidi first saw her on that hotel room bed, her skin supple and full, her hair lustrous, now styled in a cascade of dark curls, and her eyes full of orange fire. She always looked good whenever they went out, but tonight, Shigidi thought, when she finally emerged from the master bedroom, Noma is truly dressed to kill. "You look amazing," he said. "Thank you," Noma replied, smoothing her dress with her hands. The night was young, but the day had aged quickly. They had spent much of it in bed, making love and talking. Mostly talking. The conversation was largely carried by Noma because she had become his teacher of sorts, his guide in the ways of freelance spirit life. She'd kept reminding him that in their new partnership, she needed him to watch out for her, as she would for him, and in order to do that effectively, he had to learn quickly. He needed to learn how to be independent as a spirit entity and how to evade the maze of rules and barriers and controls that the major multinational spirit companies had put in place to manage their existences and prevent conflicts. Rules that were designed to limit people like her, like them. Rules designed to prevent things from returning to the old ways. Sometimes she told him stories of adventures she'd had and people she'd encountered, and those stories filled his already potent imagination. She never told him any stories about the true beginning, her beginning, before the fall. And although she mentioned her sister often and said that she was gone, Noma never shared any details and he never asked for them. He let her tell him what she wanted, and he absorbed it all, as much as he could. She showed him how to manipulate his own spirit particles, and how to control his own body and use its inherently pliable nature to his advantage, something she was extremely adept at. That evening, as the sun set behind the closed curtains, she showed him again how to loosen himself. The first time she'd tried to teach him was just after they'd made love in his new form, after her hands had examined every inch of his body. She told him to try to separate his spirit particles from the physical elements of the clay that bound his body together. She'd taken him through the steps she used to manipulate things, showing him how she'd first ignite a spark by willing her body to release pheromones, maximizing any latent sexual desires in the area, and then project that, gathering it and using it to direct the movement of her own spirit particles. She told him that since his own divine strengths lay in the illusory, not the sexual, he would need to use his imagination. He would need to visualize himself as he wanted to believe that altered version of himself into existence, the same way he used to find and mold human fears and terrors until they manifested in his victims' minds. He nodded gently, accepting Noma's wisdom without question. But the first time he attempted to change his form, his head felt like it would split in two. It felt unnatural, trying to manipulate his own body, trying to manipulate something that wasn't a dream. He had put his hand up in front of him as he lay on the bed, staring through his fingers at the ceiling. He'd started with his fingers so he could see if it could work. The first time he had imagined the thick, unfamiliar fingers of his new form expanding, spreading out, and his body had resisted the effort. His head had begun to throb like his mind was a taut drumskin that someone was banging with a large stick every time he'd visualized the expansion. But he had pushed through the pain until he felt like his head would burst and forced him to stop. He vomited then, rolling off to the side and falling off the bed onto the carpeted bedroom floor. Noma had watched without judgment, the soft curls of her hair falling over her face as she leaned over the edge of the bed and told him to get up and try again. "Everyone fails the first time," she said. And so he tried again, still failing, but no longer throwing up or falling over. And he'd started to notice his body change in response to his efforts. And as he tried again that evening under her instruction, he'd finally seen it work. "It's like training a muscle," she explained to him. "The more you do it, the more your muscles develop and the less exertion it requires. So just keep trying." "You are made of divine spirit clay. You know that already. And you know much of what it is capable of. You know how to do this. You just need to break past the threshold, the belief barriers in your own mind," she told him as she propped herself up on an elbow. "You will get there." Shigidi had repeated the sequence of actions as before. Lie back, raise head, focus on fingers, but this time he'd closed his eyes to prevent reality from interfering with his internal vision. He'd pictured his fingers loosening and spreading out from his fist like snails. He drifted into something like sleep, but not quite. It had been a heightened state of awareness. There he felt the flowering within him of a potential for expansion, for reshaping, for reforming, for all the things Noma had told him he could do, and so much more. And there was no pain, no headaches or nausea. He continued, imagining his fingers spreading out like thick wet ropes, reaching up toward the ceiling. He'd pressed on, imagining it until he felt like the image in his mind had taken form, had developed physical weight like something from one of his constructed nightmares. When he'd opened his eyes, he saw it. His fingers had extruded. He turned his hand from side to side, staring at the appendage like it didn't belong to him. The skin was drawn tight, the flesh was thin. A cluster of bright green spirit particles hovered around it. Something twisted in the pit of his stomach. Excitement and fear. This was no dream. He could reshape himself. He pressed on, his mind swelling with imagination as he pictured more of his hand loosening, expanding. It got easier and easier, just as she'd said it would, his imagination pressing his body out farther and farther. He hadn't even noticed that saliva was collecting in the corners of his mouth as he continued to loosen himself, changing the form of his physical body through the power of his imagination. It had been exhilarating. "That's enough," she said quietly, pulling his attention back. "Don't overdo it. You need to collect yourself again." He'd close his eyes again then, clearing it of all thought, all imagination. His hand contracted. "Good," Mama had said. "Very good." He'd opened his eyes again and his hand was back to its usual form, stable and solid. He'd still felt the residual high of the experience, like all the nerve endings in his body had been overstimulated and were still wild with sensation. He'd sat up and kissed her and they'd made love again. When they were spent, they lay in bed quietly. They hadn't noticed it when the curtains of night started to fall. It was only a sense of need, like a bone-deep hunger, and a realization of the late hour that finally made them begin to plan the evening's activities. They were eager to find a spirit to consume before the dawn brought the wild Lagos City nighttime revelers, so desperate to de-stress, back to their more cautious senses. Shigidi was glad to be free of schedules and work hours and targets and the demands of the higher-ranked Orisha in his former company. But Noma had taught him that independence required its own flavor of self-awareness and responsibility, like knowing that they still needed to collect enough spirits to bring Noma back to her full strength and keep themselves satiated without drawing the attention of the operating spirit company. Rich, fun-seeking Lagosians were good, generally godless prey. So they were both dressed up and ready for the night's hunt. Shigidi took her hand and they descended the winding stairs of the stately Ikoyi townhouse they had inherited from their last victims 3 weeks ago. They got into a waiting Range Rover in the driveway, one of the three cars that had come with the house. Shigidi started the vehicle and eased it out of the compound through the automated gate, tires crunching loose gravel. Before long, the house was a speck in the mirror, too small to distinguish from the dozens of others like it that lined the street like cloned soldiers. Cool wind blew in through the partially open windows as they drove down the uncharacteristically traffic-free Gerard Road, navigating around potholes. Shigidi looked up through the window to see a bright full moon hanging above a patchwork of thick silver-edged clouds like a blanket. There were no stars. "Oloru is playing games again tonight," he said out of habit, his lips barely parting. Noma turned to him with a look of confusion on her face until she glanced at the sky. Then she seemed to understand, and she relaxed. "This isn't spirit space, darling. There, the Orishas may have their games, but here, we have ours," she replied with a smile. "Yes, but their actions are reflected here," he said. "True," she conceded. "I wonder what spirit sky looks like now." She squeezed his left hand, which sat atop the gear stick. "Forget about your previous life, Shigidi." "I will. I just need time," he said. "It was all I knew before you." She kissed his cheek and turned away, eyes searching the road ahead. He pushed a button to fully wind down the windows of the sleek black vehicle, savoring the scent of the city. Smoke and dried fish and kerosene and ripe fruit mingled with the sweat of the ubiquitous hawkers, many of whom were still out, late as it was. Lagos was an olfactory melange, and he realized he had never before truly smelled the city he had frequented so much, back when he still had his poorly formed small, squat body. With his new, carefully sculpted shell, he saw and sensed and felt so much more. It was intoxicating. Despite the occasional stray memory of good things from the time gone by in the spirit company, he knew he would never trade his new life with Noma for his old one. Ever. "You look so handsome," Noma said, her eyes still on the road and her voice thick with a rasp. "Thank you," he replied, wondering why she only complimented him now. He was wearing a grey suit, purple shirt and matching pocket square, an outfit she had chosen for him. He glanced at his own reflection in the rearview mirror as if to verify what she had said. The image staring back at him was truly handsome, like a work of art. His clean-shaven head gleamed whenever the bright beams of oncoming headlights hit it. He was still almost unrecognizable to himself, sometimes feeling like he was piloting someone else's body. She had molded his clumsy clay body into something exquisite. He wondered if her praise was more for her handiwork than for his benefit, or if it was just a diversion to distract him from thoughts of Oloru and the sky and the past. He drove past a trio of rat-eyed and pot-bellied policemen at a broken checkpoint shed painted white and red, the colors of the bank that had sponsored their presence. Then he slid the vehicle onto Falomo Bridge. All along the raised concrete curb, a stream of pedestrians and hawkers milled about. "Look at them," she said, placing a hand on his shoulder. "All these people standing, selling, walking, all of them looking without seeing anything. At the mercy of the elements and the gods and whims of other, more powerful people like them. They will never know what it is like to be," she hesitated, "to be free. Free to do as you please, to prowl for faith and spirit sustenance when you need it. To answer to no one but yourself and the partners you've chosen. To not be tied down. It's wonderful, isn't it?" He said, "Yes, it is." Mostly because that was what he was supposed to say, but also because he thought it was mostly true. He was about to complicate his answer with a question when the traffic forced them to slow and a skinny young boy in tattered clothes pressed himself into the side of their car and started trying to clean the windscreen with an ugly makeshift squeegee made of a piece of old mattress foam and a broken mop handle. "Hey!" Shigidi shouted at him through the open window before dismissing him with a short but violent wave of his hand. The boy wiped away the smear of soapy water he had applied and started to turn away when Noma stretched her hand through the window to offer him a crisp new 100 naira note. The boy sprinted around to her side, took the money, and thanked her effusively before disappearing through the tight spaces between the crawling vehicles, back to the sea of roadside bodies. "Why did you do that?" Shigiri asked. Unexpectedly, she responded to his question with a question of her own. "Were you ever human, Shigiri? Even temporarily?" Noma's eyes were still firmly on the road ahead. She seemed to be in a strange mood. "No, never," he replied. He had friends that had once been human, kings, like Obalufon. But Shigiri was molded right from spirit clay and given life by Olorun himself. Some spirit entities were allowed short-term assignments in human bodies, but these were restricted to high-value performers in the spirit company, the real faith-makers and spirit reapers, and those minor deities who kissed Shongo's ass. He considered telling her that such assignments were tightly restricted because the spirit company worried that one of them would impregnate a human woman and create an Abiku spirit child. And Abiku were hard to control.
"I see," Noma said.
"Were you?"
"No, but when I was first cast out after the fall, I lost my memory for a while. I thought I was one of them, human. It was my sister who found me and reminded me who I was."
She sighed her way through a pause.
"In some way, I think I pity them. Without them, we wouldn't exist, and yet..."
She went quiet. Confused, Shigiri said nothing. A few minutes later, they reached their destination.